Have you ever had an office crush? What about a work wife or a work husband? Or how about a full-blown office romance? I have. There's something about that fluorescent lighting, stale coffee, and stuffy cubicles that just turns people on, apparently. As always, it's Avery. I'm your host. And today I'm joined by Liz, Girl Boss's general manager, and Victoria, Girl Boss's senior writer, to talk about workplace affairs. According to Forbes, over 60% of people have had a workplace romance at some point in their career. In fact, today's guest, who works at Ashley Madison, told us their biggest competitor for budding affairs is the workplace. So the pipeline from work romance to this infamous dating website is something we are going to unpack today. And I mean, I guess it can be hot sneaking around, stealing kisses in the elevator, and sharing spicy glances across the boardroom.
Absolutely. It is definitely one of our juicier episodes. So I'm guessing you've heard of Ashley Madison. Of course you have. They're the number one married dating site with more than 80 million members worldwide since 2002. I thought I read that stat wrong. 80 million members. It's available in 52 countries and in over 15 languages. I'm sure you remember their 2015 data breach where more than 9.7 gigabytes of company data was publicly released, including information on 32 million users. It caused quite a rift in many marriages. So I'll tell you a bit of the backstory of how this happened. So in February, I got an email from Ashley Madison's team, and they said the workplace is their number one competitor. And immediately I stopped what I was doing. I forwarded it to Liz and Avery, and I was like, we need to talk about this on the podcast. So I'd love to hear both of your thoughts as well.
So this is an interesting one. Obviously, let's set the ethical quandaries aside. I think what's really nice about this conversation is, like every conversation we try to have on this podcast, we're trying to be really nuanced. We're leading with curiosity, with compassion, not with judgment. What this reminds me of is I used to work, one of my first jobs was at Elle Canada Magazine, a women's fashion lifestyle magazine. And one of the articles I so distinctly remember, and I still think about it to this day, we published in 2018. It was written by a writer named Courtney Shea, and it was called "Is Cheating the Secret to Your Happily Ever After?" And it actually framed women having extramarital affairs and cheating, quote unquote, as a form of self-care. Now I know that's going to raise some eyebrows. So I actually pulled up this article, I Googled it, and I found it. It's still on the internet. The internet never forgets. And I'm going to read an excerpt from this article. According to studies from the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago, rates of reported female infidelity spiked by nearly 40% between 1990 and 2010, while the stats of men have more or less stayed the same. And while there is no one reason why women or men cheat, it does seem like the current circumstances of our gender are a fact for some. Namely, that for women who feel suffocated by the impossible expectations of modern womanhood, where having it all can feel like not just an opportunity, but a mandate, infidelity has emerged as an unlikely but potentially effective release. Cheaper than a luxury spa, easier than ever thanks to the internet, and maybe not even at odds with a happily ever after. So yeah, that article came out 6 years ago, and I think it's still as relevant as ever. So many of the points they touch on are directly reflected in this conversation today.
And speaking of articles, I read an article back in 2022, and it was actually from the Globe and Mail, and they talked about how the pandemic fueled office romances from home. So I think that the assumption is that office romances have maybe taken new shape. Maybe they're not necessarily happening as much because of remote and hybrid work cultures. We definitely talk more about this and get some real data around it in this conversation. But I know that with the way that we're communicating with one another now, I know for me, when I engaged in my little workplace romance, it started on the Slack channel. Yeah, I remember like it was yesterday. I remember we all went for drinks and I came home and I got this message via our internal Slack channel. And it was at like 10:30 at night, which is obviously not the most appropriate time to message. He sent me a message saying, "I can't stop thinking about you." And I remember my whole, okay. So I can see Liz and Victoria's faces right now.
That's hot.
I can't stop thinking about your PowerPoint skills. I can't stop thinking about how great you are at Excel. No, that's not what he meant.
And I remember laying in bed at the time next to this person that I just literally broken up with. We had a one-bedroom apartment. We had no other choice. This was our current situation. And we had this very open dialogue at that point about this breakup that I was going through. And he shared this with me. And it was like, my heart was pounding out of my chest because not only was I ever on the receiving end of like sweet little nothings from this colleague, but like to get it via my Slack channel, I was just like, what is going on?
Something that Isabella touches on this conversation, and I'm curious if this was the case for you, is just the idea of vicinity and proximity playing a huge role. If you had met this coworker of yours in a bar or just out in the world, or even if you scrolled past him on a dating app, Do you think you would have still considered him?
So we're still friends. I don't know if he listens to Girl Boss. I'm hoping he doesn't hear this, but absolutely not. No, absolutely not. Even now, knowing him more as a person and being out of the vortex that was this wonderful workplace experience for me, where I had lots of friends and we would go for drinks and we'd go for lunch together. We had what was like the friends clique, if you will. So it just felt right starting this little romance, and it was hot. We had the little secret that no one else knew about. But no, he was absolutely not my type. He's definitely not my type to this day. But because of the proximity, I got to know him on a unique level, and I just thought he was hilarious. But outside of that, it was an absolute nightmare. It didn't last very long.
Having a little office crush that may or may not develop into something more, whether it's an affair or whether there's no cheating happening, any of those things are just, I think, just one of the many ways that we just break up the monotony of capitalist corporate life.
It's a unique motivator. I remember I would show up as my best self every single day at that workplace because I was very conscious of like how I was looking each day, what I was wearing, how I was performing. I wanted to be celebrated. I wanted this aura and essence around me. So I really killed it in that job because I was not only wanting to perform in my role, but I was almost in a way wanting to perform for this crush that I had. You want them to see you in your best light.
Yeah, pep in your step. I think Victoria and I are just sitting here being like, well, we've only ever worked in women's media, so we've only ever worked with other women. So I can speak for myself and say that there has never been a viable prospect in any office environment because it was all just fellow fashion and beauty editors just talking about shoes all day, which is so lovely, but not the breeding ground for a romance for me.
Yeah, same here. And I remember there was one man, I worked at an interior design magazine. And again, a guy that I would never consider in my real dating life. And I remember it was like, oh my gosh, there's a straight man in the office. What are these feelings? And I actually, this is some tea. When I was single again, I slid into his DMs. Afterwards, I was like, hey, what's going on? We like almost sexted. It was just so awkward. I literally, now I see him pop up on my LinkedIn and I'm like, what were you thinking? It was just because he was like the only straight male and he was really tall. And again, that just, it's the glasses, man.
It was enough.
It was enough. It was enough for me. Nothing happened though. But yeah, Liz, I'm with you on that. Yeah, our prospects are slim.
I think we've shared plenty at this point, and I definitely want to get into the conversation. And what better person to talk about workplace affairs with than Isabella, the Senior Director of Communications at Ashley Madison. We chat about why the workplace is the breeding ground for affairs, the rise of non-monogamy and polyamory, and whether or not affair is still a dirty word. Let's get into it. Isabella, welcome to Girl Boss Radio. I am very excited to have this conversation with you today. First and foremost, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
I was doing some research and I saw a statistic of the number of members that you have on Ashley Madison, and I was shocked by the number. Can you share with our listeners how many people are currently on ashleymadison.com?
Absolutely. So we are a Canadian company, but we are global in reach. So we're actually more than 80 million members worldwide, more than 15 different languages, countries all over the world. It's big.
So with 80 million people, 80 million members, really, I think that the question I really wanted to start off with is, why is affair a dirty word?
I think it's still just a highly misunderstood topic. I think from my perspective, I've had the opportunity over the last 5+ years of really being a student on the topic. While this is obviously a job, I think I learn so much every day about something that is happening, like you said, so much. So I think from that perspective, it's a matter of, instead of judging, seeking to understand and approaching it with more of a curiosity. But I think that for a lot of people, it's just, they're seeing it as more black and white.
Yeah. And I think that I really want to treat this as, one thing I found really interesting is y'all have said that the workplace is Ashley Madison's biggest competitor. Why is that?
We say that when asked, obviously there's so many online dating sites out there. And so I think the assumption is we would consider another online dating site perhaps a competitor. But the truth is, when it comes to infidelity, the workplace really is, in a lot of ways, our biggest competitor because it's where so many affairs take place, really. And even our members who have joined, a lot of times their first entry point into affairs has been in their workplace.
Can you share with us some insights into the prevalence of workplace affairs amongst Ashley Madison members compared to other types of affairs?
So we actually recently did a study back in 2023 looking at this very topic, and around 42% of our members said they've actually engaged in some form of office affair. And for a lot of them, what they found was it just wasn't worth the risk. You would probably agree that when you have an affair in a professional environment, it just comes with a lot more potential for fallout that wouldn't just impact your social life, your family life, but also can impact, again, your career. So I think that while a lot of members have reported that they have at one point engaged in an office affair, they ultimately chose to come to Ashley Madison for more discretion. And with that same survey, we also looked at, okay, if you haven't had one, have you considered? And more than half reported that they had considered having an office affair. So again, just a lot of times, I think that's where those seeds are planted, whether or not you carry it out. I think that the truth is people just spend so much of their time in their workplace, especially pre-2020, pre-COVID, when it was most people working in an office setting. It's where you spend the majority of your day. So it isn't really all that surprising that those relationships would come to fruition.
But we'll definitely get into that later. I really want to talk about how vicinity can influence whether an affair happens or not. Do you have any insights around the difference of experiences specifically between men and women?
I think there's a lot of fascinating differences between how men and women approach infidelity in general. And I know for myself, when I started learning more about this space, it did catch me by surprise, because I think that there's a lot of information we have about infidelity that we receive in mainstream media that falls into these stereotypes of infidelity maybe being more of a male dominant behavior, right? And I think that specifically there's misconceptions that monogamy is more challenging for men than it is for women. And the research is starting to show it's not the case. And I think that with our membership in particular, and the research that we've done or we've seen, a lot of men are actually seeking out an affair for the emotional component, the emotional validation. And women, on the other hand, where you would think they're maybe pursuing an affair for emotional reasons, they're actually really looking to outsource their intimate needs. And that is their primary motivation. So I think for me, that was very shocking, because I had always been led to believe that women would be more inclined to cheat for emotional reasons. Men would be more inclined to cheat for physical needs. So I think that really flips the script on what we're taught about these things. And I think that, again, as more and more research is done, I think we're starting to learn a lot more in general around women and why women are seeking out affairs, because I think for so long, they really couldn't come forward and talk about it.
Yeah. And why are some other reasons that women are seeking out affairs that you found through your research?
I have the opportunity to actually speak to a lot of our members directly, and really no two reasons are exactly alike. We have members who, for whatever reason, the physical intimacy is just no longer an option in their marriage. The natural response to that would be, why not just get a divorce? You're not getting your needs met, just leave and go find it elsewhere. But I think the reality is, for a lot of women that I talk to, it's not always that simple, right? You know, a lot of members on our site report, ironically enough, being happily married in so many ways. Their partner's their best friend, their closest confidant. They've centered their life around their marriage, their financial partners, their parents together. They've really built a life. And just because this one thing isn't really being met, they are choosing to outsource it rather than leave the relationship altogether. So I think a lot of women, their spouse might have, again, just health issues or no interest in being intimate anymore. And a lot of times members will come to our site with the knowledge of their partner. And so it's not always a secret affair. It's sometimes a couple has that discussion together and they decide that's what makes sense for them as a couple. So I think that the more you talk to people, you realize that you don't really know what's going on behind closed doors. And I think that it's not always so simple.
Yeah.
There's a lot of nuances. And I think that's when I believe if people approach it more from a sense of understanding and really trying to understand what's happening rather than judging, that's when things start making a lot more sense.
Yeah, definitely. Could you elaborate on the concept of vicinity attraction and how it contributes to specifically workplace affairs?
So we spoke earlier about how the workplace is really such a common place for an affair to start. And I think it's just really the concept of vicinity attraction that actually came from Dr. Tammy Nelson, who is someone that's very knowledgeable in this space. She's a sex therapist. She's an author. And she really found that the more time spent in proximity to someone, that element of familiarity takes place. And naturally, you think of the workplace, you're putting your best foot forward, you're spending most of your time there, you're dressing your best, you're spending time with people working on projects together. So that proximity and that time spent, I think over the span of months and years, can really create a space for people to develop an attraction or feelings for one another. That's why you see the workplace as such a common place for affairs to happen.
And what's interesting is she also says it may not start with physical attraction or grow out of an emotional connection, but simply familiarity and the comfort of seeing them every single day is how that attraction grows.
Exactly. And it's where the term, again, work spouse comes from, my work husband, my work wife, right? And so many of the times it might not even escalate to a physical relationship. A lot of times it's an emotional connection, right? But for some people, that is almost perceived as a threat to their primary relationship, right? Some people would think the emotional element, confiding in someone else, that's a form of betrayal too. This idea of having a close relationship with someone of the opposite sex that you see every single day, that you work closely with, that is something that over time can really develop.
Yeah, definitely. I think that we've all had that experience before. Maybe not all of us, but there's got to be someone listening that has grown and hasn't been able to really define or understand why they're attracted to someone. And I think this might actually give them some really interesting language to frame what has grown there for them. Because I've definitely been in that spot where the first time I met someone, I wasn't necessarily attracted to them, but I found that just working with them every day, seeing them every day, to your point, seeing them in their best element at work, getting accolades, getting celebrated, being the best form of themselves, it shifted my perspective on them for sure. Attraction that wouldn't have presented itself in like a bar, even on a dating app, has found its way there over time.
Completely. If you look at like energy spent, right, you're devoting so much of your energy to your work life that oftentimes at the end of the day, whatever gas is left in the tank is what your spouse gets. That works both ways, right? Or you have couples that both work outside the house and then both come home from a long day and sit on the couch together. And what do? They're both on their phones. They're both still working, or they're carrying over the stress from the day into their home life. Whereas oftentimes when people are going out to start their day at work, that's where their focus is. That's where their energy is. Even just the way we work now and so much of how our careers blend into our personal life, it takes a lot of effort as a couple to really ensure that you're setting aside that time to devote to each other.
Yeah. What are some common misconceptions about workplace affairs that you've encountered through your work and the research that you've generated through Ashley Madison?
I would just say that they don't necessarily always have to culminate in a physical relationship. A lot of times they do. And we see that happen. I think the most common display of that would be at an office holiday party. When you have things like alcohol and socializing outside of work involved, a lot of times that's where a physical relationship can result from, that pent-up attraction over time. But a lot of times, really, it is just that emotional connection that forms. The longer someone is working in that space alongside someone else, it can really develop into something more.
Actually, I wanted to ask you about your perspective for folks that are listening that maybe think that their partner is engaging in a workplace affair. Do you have any insights on some warning signs or some sort of behaviors that they can look out for to know if this is something that might be going on?
In terms of warning signs, it would just in general, not even just with workplace affairs in isolation, but excuses to not spend time at home, right? Or assuming you live together or you sort of have a set amount of time spent together in a week, any avoidance of that time spent together. So whether it's not wanting to be home as often, not wanting to go out as often during the week, I think that is a typical warning sign. Other telltale signs we hear from our members where it's just socializing more, going out more with people that you may or may not know, finding ways to do things that aren't involving you as a couple, maybe, I think are what we see a lot. Also, when you are together at home, are they always on their phone? Are they always withdrawn from that time together? So if there's any elements of just being more distracted than usual, even we've heard from our members suddenly like a focus on their physical appearance, putting a bit more effort into how they look when they're leaving the house. Obviously, these aren't necessarily tied to people stepping outside the relationship, but I think they're definitely signs that are worth looking into.
So when it comes to gender, are there different consequences for men versus women when engaging in an affair?
There's a stat out there, Esther Perel, a renowned expert on the topic of infidelity. She talked about female infidelity has risen 40% since the early 90s, and male infidelity has remained relatively the same.
Wow.
Is that because women are, in fact, having more affairs, or they're just more comfortable actually admitting to it? Because historically, women faced way more repercussions when they stepped outside their marriage. As time has gone on, and now obviously women are in a different position, women are financially independent, they're working outside the house, they're in a lot of ways can pursue a family on their own. However, we've certainly seen plenty of examples where women today are still judged more harshly. When we look at why that might be, there's a sexual double standard there, right? Because when a man has an affair, yes, we can acknowledge that he's betrayed his partner, but there's this underlying social message that he's given in to his natural male tendencies or his masculine needs and tendencies. Whereas when a woman has an affair, yes, she's seen again as betraying her partner, but she's also betraying what it means to be feminine. There is this underlying social message that boys will be boys and monogamy is hard for men. It's not true. Monogamy is challenging for men and women. It is a choice. But I just think that we're conditioned to view genders differently when it comes to that. It's why it's not just men judging women more harshly. It's women judging other women more harshly for infidelity.
And how does this show up in social circles for folks? I remember overhearing my mom talk about this years and years ago. There was an affair that broke out in the small town that I grew up in. And the couple, where there was an affair that happened and they ended up breaking up and getting divorced, they were like isolated and ostracized by the rest of the group in the town. And my mom had told me, she said that married couples don't want to be around couples that have just divorced or there's an affair there because it creates this fear that the man or the person that had the affair, in this case, it was the husband, will be a bad influence on other people. And I don't know, do birds of a feather flock together, if you will, when it comes to the concept of affairs?
I think in certain cases, like what you just spoke about, definitely still happens. But I think if we look historically, if I were to say my grandparents' generation, divorce was really frowned upon. And so if a partner had an affair, you stay, especially as a woman, you stay, and there's way more judgment if you leave. Whereas now people throw divorce parties, and if you stay with your partner after they've had an affair, you're actually judged more harshly a lot of times for staying with a partner. We've seen an evolution just in even in that model there, but in terms of not wanting to be associated with any type of infidelity in your peer group, that happens absolutely. But we even say, with couples who are in a disclosed non-monogamous relationship. So if you look at infidelity as an undisclosed non-monogamy, disclosed would be anything under the broader umbrella of polyamory, open relationships, monogamish, don't ask, don't tell, all of those versions of disclosed non-monogamy, which by the way, are becoming more and more common, even couples that are both knowingly seeking outside partners. They don't want anyone to know about it. So couples that are on our site together, both pursuing outside partners with the intention of still maintaining their primary relationship, they don't want people to know because of that judgment you speak of. Because in the same way, people might not want to associate with that couple that just went through infidelity, they might not want to associate with a couple who's in an open relationship. Because what does that mean for them? Does that mean that couple might pursue them in some capacity? Is that a threat to their monogamy? It is an intimidating idea for a lot of people, right? Especially if that strict monogamy compliance is all that you've ever known. And if that traditional monogamy has been seen as our default in society for so long, and people are now starting to entertain a more fluid monogamy, people do see that as threatening, I think, because it's new, it's unknown. What does that mean? Does that mean my partner is going to leave me? Does that mean my partner's going to find someone else? Are they going to be tempted by somebody else? But I think it's, you can understand that it might be a scary thought for a lot of people that don't necessarily have interest in anything outside of monogamy.
Yeah, definitely. So I think for me, as someone that leads an HR and DEI consulting firm and has been in HR for now almost 17, 18 years, I've encountered my fair share of workplace affairs and whatever it may be, sexual encounters, relational dynamics that are happening within the workplace. Some of the most challenging ones to navigate have been when there's power dynamics at play. So I wanted to ask you, how do workplace affairs impact professional dynamics, specifically when there's a power dynamic? Someone that's more senior, someone that's in a position of power, someone that's maybe an executive level and they're having an affair with someone that's a junior marketing coordinator, if you will. Do you have any insights from Ashley Madison around what that impact has been?
So when we actually surveyed our members on the topic of office romance, office holiday parties, where these types of affairs are manifesting, we do see most report that it is with another colleague. Most answer that that affair, that romance happening with someone at more of a peer level. But that being said, we've certainly seen numerous examples in corporate America of men at very senior levels having affairs with staff at a more junior level. And there are repercussions, and we've seen that play out, where these executives have had to step down and they've had to answer to that. This is not only in the context of infidelity in those settings, it's just having a consensual relationship with someone who's at a more junior level. And I think that we are starting to see much more of that play out. I think there's a lot less tolerance for that.
Yeah, I think we've seen this play out. For anyone that's a Bravo fan, specifically anyone that watches Vanderpump Rules, there's been a really interesting dynamic with a very public affair that took place. And I'm curious, from your perspective, how do workplace affairs depicted in pop culture, such as involving celebrities or TV shows, compare to real life situations and scenarios?
That example you just mentioned with Vanderpump Rules, I think that is a great example of both a workplace affair, because at the end of the day, they're castmates, so they're members of the same cast, but it's also a social circle. So you see on the workplace side of things, obviously this is a secret affair carried over for months and months. So over quite an extended period of time before it was discovered. But what happened the next season? One person didn't come back, didn't return. And now, I don't think that was a matter of her not being allowed to return. I think that was a choice, but I think it's still, there was probably a level of discomfort of returning to that cast after the affair followed. So that impacted that person's earning potential and that person's career and that person's reputation in a professional setting, all of those things, there were consequences, right? I think this was an interesting case study because we spoke about her not returning to film the next season. But I think even with his businesses, right, you saw his restaurants take a hit. But that's not just impacting him. That's impacting his business partners, the people that worked at the restaurant. The restaurant was getting vandalized. There were so many things that were happening all at once. It illustrates such like the strong response people have to this day, like when infidelity happened.
Yeah. And what advice do you have for people that suspect that their partner may be engaging in a workplace affair right now?
Talk to your partner.
Yeah. I worked at a company once where it was the partner of someone that I had worked with, and they suspected that their partner was engaging in an affair. As far as I was concerned, they weren't, but they showed up at our office and made a scene and confronted this person at work. It was pretty wild. Yeah. Talk to your partner would be my advice, but not in a public setting.
Exactly. Yeah.
Not at work.
Not just showing up unexpectedly at their place of work. Yeah. That's probably a wise distinction. Yeah. But definitely communicate. It's also when these things take place, it's not just looking outward necessarily at what my partner is doing or what might they be doing to me, but it's also, I think, an opportunity to look at how that person is showing up in the relationship. What is the state of the relationship, irrespective of their suspicions that their partner may or may not be having an office affair? Are they, as a couple, still investing in their date nights? Are they spending time after work bonding and connecting? Are they traveling on trips together? Are they pursuing a hobby together? And so I think leading with open, honest communication. It's just usually a pretty good temperature check on how both people can probably be showing up a bit differently in the relationship and maybe prioritizing the relationship a bit more and just having that line of communication open. Because as much as it's very easy to put all the blame on the person that has had the affair, and while we can acknowledge that infidelity is still seen as like the ultimate relationship transgression, it is not the only way to create disconnects or issues in a relationship. And it's oftentimes a culmination of a lot of little things over time where that disconnect is happening to then create space maybe for that seeking of a connection elsewhere.
Yeah. And for the first time ever in history, we have 5 generations in the workforce. So I'm curious from your perspective and just from the data you've been able to pull from members, are there any differences between motivations or behaviors of members from different generations right now?
If we look at Canada specifically, millennials are our top age demo on the site, followed closely by Gen Z and then Gen X. But certainly, we can see that if we're looking at the youngest of this age demo as being Gen Z, they are approaching monogamy a lot differently than their older counterparts. And I think that is a result of seeing just a lot of relationships fail and the younger generation wanting to do things a bit differently. So I think that what we see with Gen Z, they are still very much interested in an anchor partnership, but they're not so concerned with the formality of marriage. And they're not so concerned with having that traditional monogamy compliance. So they're more leaning towards the idea of designing your own monogamy. And when you look at, let's say, Gen X, a lot of times they've only ever known that traditional monogamy. And a lot of times they married very young. They might have only ever had one partner their whole life. They became parents very young. And so they found themselves in situations where their relationships were sort of running on autopilot. And for a lot of them, they didn't really see a path forward other than either, again, sticking it out or divorcing. But I think the in-between of maybe outsourcing those needs wasn't necessarily an obvious choice.
Yeah, I'm really surprised by that because I think that my assumption was that the majority of people that would be members on Ashley Madison would be people like my parents' age, like 60 plus.
We definitely have a portion in that group. It's almost a rediscovery of self, because I think a lot of times, especially as women, when you hit a certain age, write off certain parts of your life maybe as being a part of the past, especially if you're finding yourself in a sexless marriage for 10 plus years, you might reach the point of acceptance where I love my partner, come to terms with the fact that this is no longer part of our relationship, but otherwise we've built a life together. So this is just something I have to live with until they don't want to live with it anymore. And they discover sex outside the relationship and feel a sense of fulfillment and reinvigoration. And it doesn't make them love their partner any less. But I think that this outsourcing of needs at that time in their life where they might have written that off completely has been incredibly empowering for these women. What's been very fascinating for me to learn is that these women do not see their affairs as a threat to their primary relationship. And that's a very important thing to note. They see them as a supplement. They see them as a form of self-care. And this might seem like I'm trivializing it, but they see it in the same way that they would see going for a massage or getting their hair done and they're going to work out. Like any form of their self-care, there's this realization that I don't want to leave this person, but I am no longer willing to sacrifice this need. And so I'm going to do it in a way that I think is discreet and responsible, and that will allow me to stay in this relationship. There's this idea that, again, if you step outside, you don't love your partner, but that, again, it's not so clear cut. There's so many members, especially like in that older demographic. We have a member that married someone 10 years older than her, and they are very happy, loving, passionate, fulfilling until he was diagnosed with advanced Alzheimer's. And overnight, their relationship completely changed. And she went from being wife, friend, lover to his caretaker. And that was a very difficult experience because not only are you, in her case, watching your partner, watching their health decline in a lot of ways, but you're now putting all your needs aside to really devote yourself to being a caretaker. And so after a while, that took its toll. But she was never in a position to leave her partner, nor did she want to leave her partner. But she had to do something to fulfill herself and fulfill her needs. And that's, for her, what Ashley Madison did. She was able to seek out and outsource that piece. And that is an example for me where I look at that and I go, that is not necessarily what people think when they think of your average Ashley Madison user. But in that older demographic, that is a very common story where one partner could no longer participate in the physical aspect of the relationship, that physical intimacy. And that is hard for a lot of people to give up. So I think that when we look at it from a bit more of a compassionate angle, I think you start to sort of understand the motivations of why someone might seek that outside partner. It's not always what people think.
Yeah.
I think that's really fascinating.
And when you mentioned the members that are part of Gen Z, that are a part of Ashley Madison.
Yeah, I think Gen Z, no surprise, they're just more open-minded. They are looking at it from a totally different lens, where I think they see non-monogamy as a place that a lot of times they can explore that with the knowledge of their partner together, right? So they're not as tethered to that idea of traditional monogamy. With younger generations, I think just even couples in general, when they're looking at their monogamy, I think there is great benefit to them actually establishing what that looks like and being really specific about it. And so one of the experts we work with, she talks about the idea of developing a monogamy agreement. So you renew your driver's license every 5 years. Why not renew your monogamy agreement? Because the person that you were when you got married, especially if you've been married 10, 15, 20, 25 years, is not the person you are today. It's hard for couples to grow at the exact same pace throughout the course of their relationship. So I think that not only developing a monogamy agreement and really being specific about what monogamy means to you as a couple, and that can be designing your own monogamy. That can be looking at more of a broad, open monogamy where maybe there are certain things that you're okay with as a couple to explore. And then revisiting it every few years and really looking at it. Are we still happy? Does this still make sense for us?
Are people treating Ashley Madison as an opportunity to get out of her long-term relationship that they're in?
It's worth noting that Ashley Madison started in 2002, and the whole premise of why the site started was because there was a stat that around 30% of people on singles dating sites at the time were married, and they were just pretending to be single, right? So it was this idea of let's create a space where people can be transparent about what it is they're actually looking for. And so in a lot of ways, we're the most honest dating site for that reason, although I'm sure people would roll their eyes at that. There is some truth to it because really, it's like people are being very clear about what it is that they want. They're not walking into a bar and taking their wedding ring off.
Do you believe in the trope of once a cheater, always a cheater?
Not necessarily, no. I have really come to realize that no two situations are alike. I think it oversimplifies and misrepresents what's really happening in a lot of ways. People are constantly changing. I think people are constantly evolving. Our needs are constantly changing. It's not always easy to have those conversations. We see people have a lot of affairs around those milestones, 29, 39, 49, like those birthday milestones. It's a time where I think people, they want to feel something. They want to feel young again. Or they want to feel what they felt when they were in their 20s and they met their partner for the first time. And it's so important to approach this topic with a level of compassion and empathy because I think it can happen to anyone. And I think anyone can participate in it, even if they don't think they ever could, right? You find yourself in these situations. So I think that when you really take a step back and look at things, people can love their partner tremendously and want to stay with their partner, but also have affairs.
Yeah. Looking ahead, what do you envision for the future of affairs at work and beyond, particularly as remote work and hybrid models become more prevalent?
Right. I think that's a great question. Where I see the most evolution is the way we perceive relationships in general and like what we look at when we think of like a successful relationship. And I don't think people are going to be as tethered to this idea of traditional monogamy as they once were. And I think that is like a big result of the pandemic. I think that altered people's view of getting everything you need from one person all the time. That's a tremendous amount of pressure to put on one person to be that everything to you at all times and to maintain all of those elements throughout the whole course of your relationship. I think, again, it's possible. It takes work. It takes mutual commitment to do that. But I think what this has done is it's caused people to reimagine their primary relationships and take a bit more ownership on designing what success looks like to them as a couple rather than just going along with what we've been taught a relationship should be. When you look at it that way, I think it's quite encouraging, actually, that people are having a bit more openness to designing that relationship on their terms and being hopefully like more honest and transparent with their partner on what they need and what they need over the short and long term, I think. And so I see as Gen Z moves in to the marriage years, it's going to change even more.
Yeah, I think that what I've observed is specifically amongst Gen Z and then even younger millennials, they're being much more critical of the things I would say have been designed for us that have the biggest impact on our life. So things like work, things like our relationships, even gender roles as it relates to how we show up within all the dynamics that present itself in our life. And what I've found to be most interesting is that people are thinking critically about how they can really have more agency around choice and designing things that work for them. And this is like a big essence of the podcast with Girl Boss in general is how do you actually define success on your own terms? And that's not just about work, that's in every aspect of your life. So I think that's a really great place for us to end the conversation today. Thank you so much for your time, energy, and for all these insights. Before we wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to leave listeners with?
Biggest thing I've learned is just to approach all of these topics you cover with that sense of understanding and curiosity and empathy. When we do that, at least from my perspective, you just get a much more broader view and I think more accurate view of what's happening. It's really good to see and it's great what you're doing. So thank you so much for having me.
And that's a wrap on my conversation about workplace affairs with Isabella from Ashley Madison. Tune in next week for another episode. And until then, leave a comment or send me a DM to let me know what we can do to make Girl Boss Radio even better. Is there a guest you think I should interview? A topic we haven't covered yet? I want to hear it. This podcast is produced by Liz Guber and Victoria Christie and edited by Diego Domine. Until next time, keep blooming.